Yeah, so I had four different powerlifters compete at the Arnold. Marissa Inda, Kristen Dunsmore, Walker Bradshaw, Joanne Ada. They competed in three different events, and two of those events, the Pro American, where Kristen was lifting, and the Grand Prix, where Marissa was lifting, were happening simultaneously. And then Walker and Joanne competed at the Raw Challenge on Friday. So it was so right off the bat, three events there. And I believe that there's actually six different powerlifting events, USAPL events at the Arnold. There is the Raw Challenge, the Pro American, and the Grand Prix, all full power meets. Then there is a push-pull meet on Sundays, and a bench-only meet and deadlift-only meet. So six different events going on. There's also an XPC meet, like down the street around the corner, but it's at the Arnold. But I'm just gonna be talking about how the USAPL structures things. So the first time I went to the Arnold to coach Marissa there, there was only one meet. It was just the Raw Challenge. So everyone who was anyone was pretty much doing that. There was the Raw Challenge plus the bench only and the deadlift only. So that was Marissa, Jen Thompson, Bonica, the whole gang. And then 3 years ago, so the 2016 Arnold, they introduced the Pro American. And at that point, I got a little bit confused because this one meet was invitational, Pro American. It was called Pro, which to me implies money, and there was prize money. But if one meet is a pro meet and the other meet is not a pro meet, then I would think that we wouldn't want to have prize money at both meets. So, but they still had prize money at the Raw Challenge, so that 2016 goes on that way. And there was people who I thought competed at the Raw Challenge who should have been in the Pro American, and whether they opted out of one or the other, people who would have gotten maybe fourth or fifth at the Pro American were instead winning the Raw Challenge and winning prize money. So that's when I started to see a problem arise there. Then the next year, 2017 Arnold, they introduced the Grand Prix, and the Grand Prix was this feature event on the Rogue Strength stage inside the expo, separate from everything else, separate from all the other meets. And that was four raw men, four raw women, four single ply men, and four single ply women on this big stage. Thousands of people watching. Very, very cool event, very competitive. Also, prize money. So we have the Pro American, we have the Grand Prix, and we have the Raw Challenge. In addition to that, we have the Pro Deadlift, Pro Bench, and then this push-pull meet. So there's a lot of stuff going on there. And this year we had incredible lifting, all around at the Pro American and the Grand Prix. Phenomenal lifting. Jen Thompson, new world record total. Ray Williams, new world record squat. Maria Hattie, huge numbers. Heather Connor, the highest Wilks ever in the IPF. Marissa benched a new American record. Jen Milliken doing Jen Milliken stuff, being strong as hell. Isabella von Weisenberg, new squat record. Taylor Atwood, huge numbers. Keith McCunney, huge numbers. Huge numbers going on all over the place, literally and figuratively. Literally, they were all over the place. They were spread out into different meets happening at simultaneous times, causing fans to have to decide which one they're going to watch. And if they're in person at the Arnold, you might say, well, if I'm on my computer, I'll just have two windows open with a live stream on each one. Well, the Grand Prix didn't have a live stream, so a lot of problems arising there. They're dividing up the fan base. They're dividing up the prize money. All told, there was $42,000 of prize money for powerlifting at the Arnold, that for USAPL powerlifting at the Arnold. When I'm talking about powerlifting at Arnold, I'll basically never be talking about the XPC. So $42,000 of prize money, but it's split up between five different meets with prize money. I don't think that the push-pull meet does, but maybe it does as well. So in that, you know, you probably had one, two, three, maybe 30 different people win prize money. And you might, you know, some people might think, well, that's great, more people won money. But from my standpoint, it's like there are people winning money who are not the best power lifters there. So before I get into how I would want to structure things, I would set it, you know, I want to say that powerlifting is the total. The sport of powerlifting is squat, bench, and deadlift combined. It is not just squatting, it's not just benching, it's not just deadlifting, it's not benching and deadlifting together. It is all three combined. That's the sport of powerlifting. At the Arnold, the biggest stage that American powerlifting has, we should do the best job of showcasing the best powerlifters. And the way that I propose to do that is as follows. So what I think that they should do is, and I know that there's cost prohibitive things to this. They pay a lot of money to have the live stream for stuff. They pay a lot of money to just have the hall that things are held in. But, and I'll get through all these reasons. What I think that they need to do is take the Grand Prix, whatever you want to call it, Grand Prix, Pro American, whatever, the meet that's on the Rogue Strength stage, make it just raw powerlifting. In fact, make the whole thing just raw powerlifting, because while I definitely respect, you know, the lifting that Blaine Sumner and Natalie Hansen and Kimberly Johnson and stuff do, no one really gives a shit. All right, no one gives a shit about single ply powerlifting in America. I know worldwide it's as big or bigger, even that. Particularly on the men's side, the single ply powerlifting, the IPF, is extremely competitive and extremely high level. People don't care about it in the U.S. This is pretty easy to see because I'm at the meets. I hear the cheering. I see what people are watching. It's not a big deal. And in, you know, the USAPL and IPF are always talking about, well, we're trying to go to the Olympics. You can't have single ply powerlifting and raw powerlifting and ever hope to go to the Olympics. So choose one, and if you ever want to go to the Olympics, choose the raw powerlifting. It's never going to happen, but if you even want them to begin to think about that, go with just the raw lifting. That's where the most competitive lifting is. You know, yes, there's extremely strong people in the single ply lifting, but on the Grand Prix stage, Marissa, who didn't even have her best day, out-totaled the 52-kilo single-ply lifter who was competing there. It's confusing to the fans. Our weightlifters, our Team Juggernaut weightlifters who were there watching, were confused, like, why are some people walking out to the bench like this? You know, what's going on? It's just, and then you throw Jen Thompson in, who's benching as big of weights as, you know, she was benching bigger than two of the single-ply lifters. Then it's just further confusing. So that's the first thing they need to do. They need to just go all raw lifting in, let's call it, the Grand Prix meet. Right now they're constrained by time in the stage that they use. But my next suggestion is to avoid the time constraints of having this one stage and the cost that's associated with it. Drop the bench only meet, drop the deadlift only meet. Though that's not powerlifting. Powerlifting, squat, bench, deadlift, all three together. Okay, so now we have the Grand Prix, just raw meat, full power. Expand that, instead of it being, you know, eight men and eight women, let's take it to a full flight. So 14 men, 14 women. This lines up very, very well. Recently, the USAPL came out with their top 25 lifters by Wilks for men and women. On the women's side, there is pretty distinctly, you know, from the 2017 rankings, pretty distinctly four top women, Jen Milliken, Kim Walford, Marissa, and Jen Thompson, who are all at 530 plus in the Wilks. And then you had about another nine lifters after that, from 517 Wilks down to about 490, 492, something like that. So that's one great flight of female lifters. That's 13 lifters right there. Maybe someone's hurt, maybe whatever. You either bring another American along, you invite a couple international lifters as they have. This year they had Isabella von Weisenberg. They had Maria Hattie in the Pro American. Last year was Liz Craven. So you have one full flight, 14 lifters, 14 men, 14 women, raw, full power. You extend the time on the stage from the 2 or 2.5 hours that it is right now, and it's going to end up being, 3 or 3.5 hours. It's not going to cost them more. It's just going to get reallocated a little bit because they're not going to pay for the time on the stage the other day. So you have Saturday morning, Grand Prix, whatever you want to call it, the biggest meet by Wilks with the biggest lifters. All of that prize money, $42,000 that they gave out this past year, gets consolidated all to that meet. All right, you pay for the live stream for it. USAPL and IPF do phenomenal jobs with their live stream, incredibly professional, well done. But they didn't have a live stream for the Grand Prix. 2 years in a row, they didn't have a live stream for the Grand Prix, where the best lifters are. All right, and no offense to the people doing the Raw Challenge, but the Raw Challenge, saving the push-pull meet, there is the lowest level of competition there, but they're live streaming the Raw Challenge, but not the Grand Prix. People want to see the Grand Prix lifters. So take that money, redistribute it, live stream this Grand Prix meet, full sessions, the great, great lifters that they have, and showcase them to the fullest. Take that $42,000 of prize money. You might think, well, that's coming from sponsors. So you can, SBD sponsored the Grand Prix and the Pro American. That probably cost them about 20 G's to do. And then it was A7 sponsoring the Raw Challenge. And, I'm not sure on the bench and the deadlift, but different sponsors there. You can have one title sponsor, SBD Grand Prix. And then the Grand Prix squat presented by blah, blah, blah. The Grand Prix bench press by another company. The Grand Prix deadlift by another company. Take that $42,000 and split it up. $21,000 of the men, $21,000 of the women. Very simple breakdown there would be, $10,000 for first place, $5,000 for second, $3,000 for third, $2,000 for fourth, $1,000 for fifth. Now, you still are going to pay out 10 lifters, but they're going to be the 10 most elite lifters there, 5 on the men's side, 5 on the women's side, where currently people are getting paid who if everyone was in one meet, they wouldn't be getting paid. It's not a charity. Not everyone needs to get paid. So just stop, stop paying out at all the meets. And then you can add bonuses. Let's maybe take the numbers down a little bit. I just did that because it adds up to 42,000, but take a little bit off those prize monies and make them bonuses for biggest squat, by total pounds or by Wilks or both, biggest bench, biggest deadlift. So then you still satisfy the idea of the single lift specialist to a bit of a degree, like they do with the bench and like they do with the squat. But as a whole, I feel that the USAPL and IPF greatly overemphasize single lift performance over the total, the sport of powerlifting, the total. At Worlds last year, Marissa, world champion, zero world records she doesn't have any world records in a single lift. Only the world record in the total, aka the sport of powerlifting, the only thing that matters. And we're seeing, on the IPF Instagram, this squat record get posted, this bench record get posted, this deadlift record get posted, without a mention of the fucking champion of the whole thing. The reason that they're there, to make the biggest total. This will allow more attention being given to the thing that actually matters the most. So let's say they have this meet on Saturday morning, huge, huge deal, huge crowd, great event. And it would be and it will be. And the events they do now are great. They just could be better. And now you have the Raw Challenge meet, full power, powerlifting, know, that's what powerlifting is, squat, bench, and deadlift. And that can go on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday if you want to. USAPL can get, you know, probably 250 some lifters in that over the 3 days, still in a great venue, still great energy. If you want to live stream that, go ahead and do that. Don't put any prize money on it, because why would you pay the next tier down, the second tier of lifters, prize money? You know, give that to the professional power lifters. And you know, just have a great local meet there that people come compete at. They get the experience of the Arnold. Most people aren't going there to win any prize money. They don't have a shot at it. So that's not going to change the signups. You can have a great meet going on the whole time there. Emphasize raw powerlifting, the fastest growing, the most interesting, most relatable to the fans. And emphasize full power. That's what powerlifting is. Now, full power meets. Maybe someone has to take a token squat or a token bench or a token deadlift because of whatever injury or something. Maybe they're just not very good at that meet. Maybe there's going to be someone who's in the raw challenge, you know, and they're a huge bench presser or a huge deadlifter, and they're going to complain, well, I should be in there winning that prize money because I had the biggest, you know, the biggest bench of the entire weekend between all the meets, but they didn't have a total that would qualify them. Well, guess what? Get better at powerlifting. Then you can be in the premier powerlifting meet to win money with your big single lift that contributes to your big total. Again, the sport of powerlifting. So that's kind of my thoughts about that. We need to consolidate, focus on raw, focus on full power, showcase the best lifters with the live stream, you know, totally unacceptable, and I understand that it's very expensive, but you gotta put those biggest lifters on the live stream and showcase your sport the best way possible. See those great head-to-head matchups. You know, you'd have great intra weight class matchups as well as great competition for the Wilks this year. You know, this year the biggest Wilks was outside on the men's and women's side was outside of the Grand Prix, which is supposed to be the best meet. Heather Connor made the highest Wilks of all time in the Pro American, 558. You would have had her with the 558 Wilks going head-to-head with Jen Thompson with 549, with Marissa at 539, with Jen Milliken in the high 530s, Maria Hati with something, you know, another huge number in the Wilks. So you want to get them all in the same place, make it the best event possible for the spectator, for the athlete, to showcase the sport, all that good stuff. So pretty straightforward, I think, but yeah, they never listen to me, so we'll see. The next part of things that I want to talk about, Pan Am selection, drug testing, corruption, I don't know, within USAW. So also at the Arnold, we had the Pan Am Trials session for weightlifting. Team Juggernaut had four athletes competing there. Justin Meyer in the men's session, Alyssa Ritchie, Kiana Welch, and Alexandra LaChance in the women's session. Max and I talk about this topic a bit more in depth in next week's episode of The Jug Life, so make sure to check that out on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and thejuglife.com. But what I specifically want to talk about it more is that there was no drug testing of any of the Pan Am session athletes. But there was drug testing there. USADA was there. They tested athletes in the regular American Open Series 1 sessions, but didn't test anyone from the Pan Am trial session. That's problematic for several reasons. You know, CJ Cummings snatched an American record. He needs to be drug tested when that happens. I'm not trying to insinuate in any way that CJ Cummings is on drugs. I 100% think that he's clean, and he should be given the opportunity to show that he is clean by being drug tested. The record should not count if the athlete is not drug tested. Something the USAPL does really, really well. You break a world record, they drug test you every time, guaranteed. In international weightlifting, there are certain standards of what meets records can be broken at, and doping control is part of that. Chinese nationals, Russian nationals, there's people lifting huge, huge weights in excess of the world record, often every year, maybe multiple people every year, but they don't count towards world records. They cannot be official world records because there's not doping control there. So why would the U.S., as you know, who holds themselves up as this shining light of doping control and everything, and USADA and all that stuff, the clean sport and everything, how can we not test our athletes breaking records? So, and those athletes breaking records should be tested. They should want to be tested and prove their cleanliness in that. One of our athletes, Kiana Welch, snatched 109 kilos, which would have been a new American record. She got three reds on it. I'm still not sure how or why. That's a topic again that we cover in next week's Jug Life. But if that 109 snatch for the new record for Q would have counted, we would have wanted her. We want her to be tested. We want to show she's lifting these weights and she's clean. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that there is an athlete in the Pan Am session eligible to make the Pan Am team who has not been tested in all of 2017 or all of 2018 by USADA. Maddie Sasser was an Olympian in 2016 for the Marshall Islands. She has now been, from what I've been told, given expedited citizenship to the United States to lift for the USA. As far as I know, she will be representing Team USA at the Pan Am Games and in the USADA database. Zero tests. Zero tests for 2017, zero tests for 2018. Certainly was not tested right after the competition at Pan Am's. Maybe they got her some other time and that test will be posted within the next week, but zero tests. It is a requirement. It is in the bylaws for international team selection by USAW. Then athlete must be in the registered testing pool for 6 months prior to being selected for international competition. And I'm not to say that she hasn't been in the registered testing pool, but she hasn't been tested. So what the fuck good is it to have an athlete in the registered testing pool if you're not testing them, especially if the athlete is suspicious? All right, I'll say suspicious. And I've been told by some higher-ups in USAW that she's being allowed to be eligible for the team because of being in the whereabouts program for the Marshall Islands. Well, we've been told, Max and I have been told by dozens of people that she's been living and training in Montana, where Max knows all the people. I mean, it's his fucking name, so he's basically the governor. That she's been living and training in Montana. And do you think that the Marshall Islands anti-doping program, which God knows, you know, how corrupt and small and inept it is traveling to Montana to test an athlete for out-of-competition testing, an athlete that's not even going to compete for them anymore? Of course not. That's a ridiculous thought. So to have an athlete being put on the team with zero tests, even if she was in the registered testing pool, is an egregious error by USA Weightlifting. Let's rewind. 2016 University Nationals included a world team trial session in it. Also at that meet, Alex Lee broke an American record. There were some big lifts that happened. There was a big uproar after that meet that American records were broken. People were making teams without drug testing. USADA was not there, did not test anyone. Here, they were at the Arnold and just didn't test anyone in the Pan Am session. There, they weren't even present. This was a meet in Utah. Big uproar about it. People are saying that USADA was asked to be there, told to be there, told the schedule, and then they didn't show up. They refused to show up. They no-showed, whatever the reason was. USADA catches wind of that a few weeks later and says, no, in fact, we were told not to come and test this event. In that meet, Sarah Robles was her first competition back from a two-year doping suspension. USADA is not there. You know, Sarah has been the most tested U.S. weightlifter, 10 tests in 2017 and 2018. All of them passed. Fantastic lifter, fantastic performances. Sarah Robles is lifting clean. But to have a first meet back for an athlete coming off suspension, who then went on to qualify for the world team under very controversial circumstances, you know, basically being put onto the world team with some sort of loophole, you know, not qualifying for it the same way that everyone else did because of a lack of international competition during that time period, to not test that athlete is unacceptable. It is unacceptable, especially when you hold yourself up as, you know, the best anti-doping program, the, you know, stalwarts against doping in sports. Fast forward a few years before that, Jerilee Vega, coming off of a doping suspension when she competed from Puerto Rico, is brought to the United States, expedited citizenship, lifts for the U.S., not in the registered testing pool, no tests, lifts big weights, then lifts for the U.S. at the subsequent world championships without having been tested. Her result in that meet, in her earliest time in the U.S., coming fresh off of a doping suspension when she had not been tested by USADA, were the biggest weights that she lifted in her entire career as an American lifter. There's too many similarities to that Jerilee Vega situation or that University Nationals World Team Trials situation and this Pan Am Trials Maddie Sasser situation for me to feel comfortable with. If you're going to take a hardline stance on doping, then take a hardline stance on doping. All right, it has to be for everyone. If you want it to be like Russia and it's for no one, then make it for no one. But make up your fucking mind about where you really stand on doping. There are other issues pertaining to this that I'm not going to get into at this time, but there's just inconsistencies in what I'm seeing in the way that USAW enforces anti-doping violations, safe sport violations that need to be handled. It needs to be consistent. It needs to be transparent. It needs to be what they say they want to be, which is this great, you know, is this great fighter against doping in sports. So if you say you want to be that, be that. That's all I got to say for today. This was another episode, Beers with Chad, bonus episode to the Jug Life podcast. It will be up on all our feeds tomorrow morning, just the audio version. So you'll be able to find it on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. And next week, I'll be in Australia with clinics in Brisbane and Canberra that are all sold out. Space still remaining for my programming lecture in Melbourne. Then right after that, going to be in New York, two Jug Life Live events, one that is sold out on Friday night, Snatch Clinic plus Jug Life Live at JDI Barbell. Then the next night we will be at Outlift Athletics in Long Island for a free squat clinic and then Jug Life Live. So visit the events section at store.jtsstrength.com to sign up for that. Subscribe to our YouTube, subscribe to the Jug Life podcast, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice. If you're interested in online coaching, visit juggernautcoaching.com. We have powerlifting, weightlifting, super total power building, and strongman coaching. So check all those out. Thanks for watching. You know, do not be complacent in just accepting what some of these governing bodies are doing. You have a voice, so let them hear it and make sure that this stuff is getting done the right way. Thank you for watching, and I'll see you next week.